Good morning, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. Welcome back. Vayichi to go. Shabbos Chazak, the end of Sefer Bereishis. It's always very, very sad to end Bereishis. You know, it's like, it's so hard. One of these years, we're going to just go through Bereishis straight, pasuk by pasuk, uncovering every detail, you know, analyzing it, because you have to do it. You have to do it. Maybe after Sefer Shmuel. We'll consider that. So I had maybe a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity on Monday morning. Monday morning was a legal holiday, and we had a later minyan, we had an 8:30 minyan, and there were no kohanim in that minyan. So Sam Heller called me up for Rishon. I don't know if I'm ever going to get the Kohen Aliyah ever in my life. Who knows, right? For Vayichi. And why is that so significant? That's a general good, very... very cool to get that. But additionally, it's not so easy to find the beginning of Parshas Vayichi. Why is that? Rashi tells us, Parshas Ustuma. Generally, when we have a new topic in the Torah, it begins on a new line. It's a Parsha Psucha. It's on the next line. Very few times in the Torah, this is the first of, I think, two times, the entire Torah, where the Parsha is Stuma, where there is no stoppage in play between the previous parsha and this parsha, meaning it goes unnoticed. It goes unnoticed. It's called a stuma. It's closed off, which is not the way it is. What the Torah means, or the Chazal means closed off, means there's no. It's not obvious that you begin it. It just goes from Vayigash straight into Vayichi on the same line with no space in between. So it took the Baal Koreh an extra moment to remember that and to identify it in the column of the Torah. So Rashi tells us, Lama Parsha Zu Stuma. Why is it that Parshas Vayichi is Stuma? I'm going to make the disclaimer that when Rashi says this, he's not talking about the whole Parshas Vayichi. The fact that we have these split up like this maybe is not from us. But why is this beginning, Vayichi Yaakov, which is a new topic, not begin another line? Rashi says the following. He gives several answers. If he should cave and should nifter Yaakov Avinu, once Yaakov died, nistimu einehem belibam shel Yisrael, the heart and the eyes of the Jewish people were closed off. Of what? Because of what? Saras Hashibur. Shishchilu l'shamba. Once Yaakov died, already the servitude, the slavery, began in Mitzrayim. Davar Acher, Shebikesh Legalos is a case. Yaakov asked to reveal the end of days, Minista Mimenu, and it was closed off from him. So does closed off mean that the Jewish people were closed off, that they were constricted now as a result of Yaakov's death? Or does it mean a reference that Yaakov wanted to reveal something, reveal when Mashiach was going to come, and that was closed off from him? Or, I think there's one more answer. No, that's it. There are other answers in other Rishon. Asks the Gur Aryeh. The Gur Aryeh is a super commentary on Rashi. It was written by the Maharal. The Maharal says, this is a contradiction. Rashi, in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, says, when did the Shibud begin? When did the Shibud begin? So you learn Rashi in Parshas Vayechi. When did Galus Mitzrayim begin? It began once Yaakov died. When did it begin? Vayaka Melech Chadash. So says Rashi, in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, that when did it begin?
Rabbi.
When?
Did it.
1 second. When all the Shvatim died. When one of the Shvatim was still alive, the Egyptians did not subjugate us. Once all the Shvatim were gone, then the Egyptians began the suffer. Who was the last Shevet to die? This says a lot about their progeny. Levi, right? See, the Mesorah is very, very important, right? the relationship between grandparents and grandchildren is very, very significant in the Mesorah. It doesn't mean that Levi was pounding them like, you bet. No, just that presence there, like modeling values, makes an imprint. Not everybody has that schus. It doesn't work out. It's on the card for everybody. But here, the Maharal presents a very clear contradiction in two Rashis. Rashi says that the Sheba began in the beginning of Vayichi, with the death of Yaakov, the end of Vayichi, whenever he died. Or it began many, many years later with the death of the last of the Shvatim. So what is it? Before we get there, Jules, you had a comment?
No, it's okay.
Okay. Okay, so what do we think? Men, do you have an answer?
I mean, it's like when they first executed some of the war, it was years before when they started to do certain things that were against the Jewish people.
So, right, so the Holocaust is a good model here. We'll talk about that in a moment. The Gur Aryeh says something very vague. He says the following. Shibra zeh lo haya bekvius. Ela lacha shemes Yosef v'chol achav. The Shibud really began after Yaakov died, but it wasn't bikvius. It wasn't established. It wasn't set in stone. Later on in history, it was more formal. It was more formal. The Menachem Tzion, Rabbi Tzion Zaks, we're learning a lot of his Torah this year, he elaborates on this. He doesn't quote the Maharal, but he elaborates on this. He says that there are two different types of shibud. Echad, shibud galoy v'nikar, very obvious, overt. The anti-Semites are out. Shibud oshek zechuyos ezrach u'meshamesh matara l'chitzei peranius. It's explicit that they try to undermine the citizens of the nation, right? They give limitations to the Jewish citizens of their country and punish them as a result of them being Jewish. Shibud zeh ad kama shu machbid u'memarer es chayei mishubadim. Okay? This, right, tremendously, you know, gives suffering to those that are in this, you know, living during this time. Yesh bo shaviv shal or hu kmias ha-mishubadim legu. Right? And it limits, you know, we feel distant from being free when you feel this shibud, which is very overt. It's formalized as part of the government. But there's a different type. Shibud sasum, that word, closed off. Ubiltinikar. You can almost not notice it. Hamishubadim nehanim mikol zechuyos ezrach. The people get all the benefits of being a citizen of this great country. And they get full privileges of being citizens of the country they live in. And they don't see any darkness, or they don't experience anything overtly. Shibud zeh hino agarua shebishibudim. He writes, this is even worse sometimes because those people don't even realize that they are in galus, right? The wheels are turning maybe behind the scenes. And it, you know, you can look at it maybe in a retrospective 20 years later, 30 years later, but you don't notice what is happening, right? If you just look at history from World War I to World War II, what was happening in Europe, you saw things that were brewing behind the scenes. Not even the overt anti-Semitism. We'll talk about it from the level of assimilation. How many Jews have been lost in the past 75 years to assimilation? That's not a galus. That's not a shibud. That's not a shibud. Maybe that's even worse because we don't even know. We don't even know right? That we're losing so many people, right? This is Rabbi Noach Weinberg. I just lent out his biography. I haven't read it. It is gold. You have to read his biography. This is what he said. We are in the middle of the Holocaust. That's what he told his students at Isha Torah. And that's why he had to start a Kiev organization that spread all over the world. The Jews are on fire right now. We are burning. Nobody is paying attention. Nobody's paying attention. And there's so much that we need to do, that we need to do. Millions and millions and millions. There's no number. There's no commemoration day, whether it's January 27th or Yom HaShoah, the Hagura, Kafsa. There's no day. There's no day. We're not paying attention to it because it's going unnoticed. And we're just going on in our lives. And slowly, eventually, what happens? The overt anti-Semitism, you know, Kristallnacht, Nuremberg laws, not Nuremberg, they come out, and then we see it in a very obvious way. So things happen in stages. Yes.
How does Jewish life in time? We have the parallel for the Holocaust. I think, the Jews in Germany when you're entrenched, like living in America today, if you're living, you have a high standard of living, you have everything that's good, you don't want to hear about things like that. It's just dumb.
Yeah.
How is the life of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim?
How is life of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim? We know very little. It sounds like everything. Yeah. It sounds like things were fine. They lived separately, more or less. They lived in, you know, they lived in Goshen, more or less. It sounds like everything. You know, they were involved in society to whatever degree they were.
Yeah,
right?
Like I said, in America, most people make it nice, people in Germany make it nice, and you don't, and you have things that really are nice, you don't have any. You don't want to go for something that's
worse. Yeah.
Some people do step off and that, but most people don't. I think, especially if you're older, you don't want to think of risk.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a lot to think about with this, and there's a lot of parallels between what has occurred here the past 100 years in our and Sheba Mitzrayim. There's a lot of parallels. You can Google, there are articles that talk about this a lot. Yeah.
This would be the next message about Shlomo by Goldstein. I remember
her. Yeah.
How we parallel the power.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said on that. Yeah. 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 100%. So Yaakov is ill. And he calls Yosef into his chambers. And he says to him, if I find favor in your eyes, please do for me a chesed yemes. Don't bury me in Egypt. I want to live with my, you know, sleep, dwell with my forefathers. Maras Machpelah. Fascinating. He doesn't use those words. He doesn't use the word Maras Machpelah. Swear to me that you'll do this. Good. Then the Torah continues. Somebody comes, a short while later, somebody comes to Yosef and tells him, Hine avicha chole. Your father is sick. Your father is not doing well. And what does Yosef do? He brings Menashe and Ephraim with him. Good idea, right? Saba's not feeling well. Let the grandchildren see him for one last time. So Yaakov brings them in. Yosef brings them in. And Yaakov tells Yosef this whole story. A whole spiel. You don't know what's... Let me tell you what happened in my life. Kel Shakai Nikaralai Beluz, Beretz Kanan, Vayivarchosi. God bless me in Eretz Kanan. I was, you know, very good there. You're going to make me into a great nation. You have a lot of children. And then, and then he talks about Ephraim and Menashe, that Ephraim and Menashe are going to be like Reuben and Shimon. Okay? And then he tells a whole story about Rachel and Leah. By the way, I was leaving Padan Aram, and on the path Rachel died, your mom, and I couldn't bury her in Mitzrayim. I couldn't bury her next to me in Maris Lachbela. I had to bury her on the derech, on the path, and that is Kfuras Rachel, Adi Yom HaZeh, and Beis Lachem. Okay? And you have to ask yourself, and then he goes back, and he says, who are these kids with you? And he gives them a bracha, and the rest is history. So what's going on here? Right? If he wants, many of the Mefarshim are very puzzled by this story. If he wants to tell him to bury him in Israel, he already told him that. And there's a whole background to the story about why Israel is so central in his life. Then that should have been prefaced in the beginning. It's not. Maybe he's re-emphasizing here. But if he is re-emphasizing that same notion and reminding Yosef of the promise that he made to him, why is it bookended by Menashe and Ephraim? It should be two different things. What are all those things put together? So I want to share with you a thought from one of the Rosh Hashiva at YU, Rav Eli Baruch Shulman. He writes a lot of his drushos, Brooklyn, Ocean Avenue, okay? Young Israel Midwood. He writes a lot of his drushos up online. He puts them on YU Torah. So he writes the following. He says, take a step back. Let's talk about the conflict between Rachel and Leah. Not just about Rachel and Leah themselves, but also about the B'nai Rachel and Leah. What did Rachel want in her life? What was the only thing that she really wanted in her life? She wanted children. She wanted children. She longed for children. Havali banim v'im ayin meisanim. We analyzed this pasuk a few weeks ago. Leah just wanted the opposite. She had no trouble conceiving. She only wanted the affection of her husband. She wanted Yaakov. And this is highlighted through many stories, most notably through the Dudaim, right? Leah didn't have any fertility issues. Reuven brings him this aphrodisiac for his mother. Rachel needs them. They trade to have what they want. Rachel wants the Dudaim because she wants to have children. Leah wants a night with her husband, just to be with her husband. And that's it. They each search what they can't have. And this really is the story of the backdrop of all the brothers of Yosef. The fighting that we have, and it doesn't, we're going to see, there's a short reprieve right now in Vayechi. Later on in history, in Tanakh, when we learn more, say for Shmuel, we will see this a lot more. That the brothers are always split up based on this paradigm. It's B'nai Rachel and B'nai Leah. B'nai Rachel, B'nai Leah. And it's very, very sad. You see Yosef, who's fighting against Yosef? Hu na'aris b'nei Bilha v'es b'nei Zilpa n'shei Aviv. Ve'yavei Yosef is Yivah Samra'a El Avihim. Okay. So he spends most of his time with b'nei Bilha v'es Zilpa and not with them. So now what's going on here? When do things change? Things only change when Yehuda comes down and defends Binyamin. At that moment, Nafsho Kshur Ben Nafsho, that he says to Yosef, my soul is tied up to his soul. That's when things change. It's important to note that later on in the Torah, that same language is used, Nafsho Kshura Ben Nafsho, with David and Yehonatan. Why is that important? David comes from what tribe? Yehuda, and Yehonatan is the son of Shaul, which comes from Binyamin. Same language. Meaning there's a Masorah here. When you want to show that you really care about a brother that historically there was strife, Nafsho, Kshura, B'Nafsho. And that was able to bring everybody back together. It wasn't only Yehuda that changed, but Yosef changed. Yosef says, Ki lemichya shachani alechem. You came down here, I understand it all now. I came here to help you. I'm going to be, I'm going to support you. I'm going to take care of you. During this entire time here, you don't need to worry for 1 second. I'm working this all out for you. Don't ask questions. Just ask and I will give, right? So now you have to understand what's going on. Why are Menashe and Ephraim asserting to the story? Yaakov is saying that Rachel and Leah, they couldn't get what they wanted in their life. They couldn't get it. When did they get it? After they died. Why? And why now? Why am I bringing this up to you? It's only as effective when the brothers are together. Meaning, when they died, you're right, they couldn't get what they wanted in their life. When did they get it? After they died. Rachel is buried on the path by Derech. What is she called? Mama Rachel. Rachel Mavaka Albana. We need her there for the future. And she's buried there, and everyone goes to Davin and Mama Rachel. Leah, on the other hand, she's buried with her husband. That's what she wanted. Usually in life, you can't get what you want. They got it after. Here, I'm able to give you something, right? And now I'm able to give Rachel even more what she wanted. Because you, the brothers, were able to come together. What am I giving her? I'm expanding her children. She technically only gets two tribes, Yosef and Binyamin. Now she gets Menashe, Ephraim, and Binyamin. I'm expanding her role. I could only do that, right? Express her will, because that's what you did. The brothers modeled that. They opened up their hearts to let in, right? To let go, really, of everything. And they were able to express this. This is why these two stories are interconnected. Menashe and Ephraim becoming tribes is the end, right? Is the end of this chapter of the strife between Rachel and Leah, and between the B'nai Rachel and B'nai Leah. Yehuda and Yosef are the two that bring it together. And because of that, that results in Ephraim and Menashe, Keruvein v'Shimon Yehiyuli. Right? So we see here, very significantly, I think, very important messages. We don't always get what we want in our life. And that's very, very important. Right? And sometimes people are just stuck on that for their entire lives. That mantra, we're stuck. And you live life. 40 years ago, I didn't get. And like that colors somebody's whole life. And it's very hard. It's very hard to move on. Right? And sometimes it requires a lot of personal work to be able to move forward, addressing and processing that fact that you couldn't get what you so desired in your life. Yeah. You always get what you want when you need it.
When you want it.
When you want it.
It's when Hashem thinks that, you know, when it's the right time.
Right.
Because we don't know when the right time is for us.
Right. But the way to bring things forward sometimes is when you let things go. Right? When Yehuda and Binyamin are able to let things go, then you see this process moving forward. Okay, that is the second idea for today. The first one was the stira, contradiction in the Pesukim about when the Shibut actually began. The second idea was from... Yeah. This Rabbi Soloveitchik writes, this is the first time that we see in the Torah that an interaction between a father, a grandfather, and a grandson. That's why the Rambam calls Yaakov Yisrael Saba. It's in the Rambam's halachic work. He is the paradigm for it. There could have been other times where Avraham interacted with Yaakov, but it wasn't in the Torah. I mean, it's not explicit in the Torah. Metushelach probably interacted with Noach, but it's not explicit. It's not explicit in the Torah. This is because this is paradigmatic for what the Torah wants. It's purposeful. You know, do we have other times?
We have a lot of choices. You still had more choices than Avraham, Yaakov. You still had a whole school of possible grandchildren that interacted.
It's not in the Torah. It's not in the Torah that Yitzhak interacted with his kids. It's they probably did at some point, but likely, I can't say for sure. But it's we don't see it. We don't see it. Lavan, but we don't see we don't have a pasuk that says that Lavan interacted with them. Only that he wanted to chase them down. Yes.
For whatever, for the only species, that has a great relationship.
Interesting. We're only species that has a grandparent relationship. Elephants and whales.
You have to have a lifespan long enough.
Right. Fair.
No,
okay, someone's got to Google that. There's got to be an article on that. Where animals don't have as emotional attachments in general. Right. Fair. Right.
It's like a whole
right.
And
right
here,
yeah. There is, I'll just, this is, but it also focuses on this emphasis here about what is, you know, what do we give value to in halacha? Halacha gives value to age and wisdom. And Leon Cass, who he's a historian, professor, passed away a few years ago. He has a fascinating approach. He wrote about this, and I think Rabbi Sachs and Meir Soloveitchik both used his chiddush about Egyptian society in Divrei Torah, that they, Egyptian society, cast away elderly. They didn't care for them. That's why people were shaved. You couldn't have a beard in Egypt. Dr. Bechler, he should have a refuah shleima, would always say that why didn't they not notice Yosef? So Rashi says, because he left bechatimat zakan. I'm saying the way that Dr. Bechler would say it. And now he doesn't have chatimat zakan. So everybody interprets that as he was 17, he didn't have a beard. And now he's 39, he does have a beard. So he says that's not accurate historically. Egyptians never had beards. He left with the sign of a beard, chatimat zakan. He had that moniker. He looked that way. He had that avatar, right? And now, 22 years later, he didn't have a chatimat zakan. Because in Egypt, you don't have beards. They really disregarded people that were elderly. They pushed them aside in that society. They really believed in youth. And that's what they, before they embalmed somebody, they had a statement that they would say about the power of youth. And this is, you know, Egyptian society meeting Torah society and the value even in Egypt of, you know, the generations. And the relationship between the grandparents and grandchildren, very, very significant. Okay, let's go and analyze two of the brachos. So Yaakov gathers all the sons together. Yaakov Kamenetsky is medayik in the psukim that all the brothers receive their bracha in front of everybody else. Right? Rav Yaakov, I think the Rav Yochum Levavitz also writes it as well, is that you would have thought each one gets their own bracha. Okay, leave the room and come back at the end and we'll do a whole thing together. No. He says everyone got it together. That was powerful. But everyone should see what their significant contribution to Klal Yisrael is. And they should appreciate that vis-a-vis the whole. Vis-a-vis everyone else, right? You are all, you know, we need every single one of you with your own personality, with your own, what you, and you give so much to Klal Yisrael, you have to understand that and how you fit into the whole picture. Yeah.
If I was there, and I was one of the younger brothers going towards the end, and I heard the name Shimon, maybe, the brother was, I would be shivering in my pants.
You'd run out of there, right.
I would say, get me.
Ruvain, right.
Nobody would look at the brother, because it doesn't, and especially ladies makes no sense. Well, because we all know when the lady turns out, and in comparison to the bracha, it's like you shake your head.
Right. Yeah. If you hear Reuven Shimon's lady, you're like, "Can I go to the bathroom?
I
think I have a meeting." These are older men. These are not youngins at this point. They're older guys. And so they probably are a little bit nervous. Naftali, well, focus. Naftali, Ayala Shlucha. He is a sent off gazelle. Hanosein Imrei Shachar. So Naftali only gets, you know, one pasuk. Okay. Hanosein, he gives Imrei Shachar, words of Shachar. So what in the world does this pasuk mean, right? What are we saying about Naftali? So Rashi tells us that really this is all a reference to not about Naphtali's physical attributes, but the portion that he's going to get in Israel is going to be, the fruit is going to grow very really fast.
So we want to be there at 6.
Rabbi.
The fruit is going to go really, really quickly, like the Peiros Ginesar is going to go quickly, just like a gazelle runs swiftly through the desert. Others focus really on the fact that Naphtali was very, very swift and quick.
I'll figure it out.
It's a reference to the fact that a woman's story, that when Yaakov was being buried,
Esau changes all
that. Please make sure that everybody
here, so I can't ask him,
wants to have a question.
He said he wants.
Okay. When Yaakov was being buried, Esau stood in front of the kever and said, "This is my plot. It's not your plot." And they said, "What are you talking about?" And they started fighting. There was an argument. And they said, "We have proof. We have documentation for this." So where is it? It's in Egypt, right? If you bury someone today, what do you need? You need documentation. Nothing changes. Why do they pause by the front of the funeral home? You got to go to the office. Got to get the paperwork. You have to make sure. Once in 13 years, sometimes you make a mistake and you bury someone in the wrong spot. That's not a good idea. That's a bad thing. People have spots in their purposeful places. So what happens here? They send Naphtali. Naphtali, you run back, because Naphtali is very, very swift. He's very, very fast. He's quick. That's why we asked last week in Shul, Shabbos morning, why didn't they, Yaakov send Naphtali to build the yeshiva, not Yehuda, because he's much faster. So Rav Chaim Palagi just makes a very good, very sharp point over here. He says the following. To my notes somewhere. He makes the point that
3, 5, 0, 0, 6. Message deleted.
Okay.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I don't know if you're going to go into it, but I always question when he comes back and then eventually they behead Esau and his head rolls into Maris Makpelah. Why is he even a part of him buried there? A Russia right. Like that.
Why is his head buried there, not his?
Yeah. Now I'm not saying why he rests him. I'm saying why even a Rosh. Nothing should be a part of him.
Right. It's a great question. I'm not sure. Why is his head buried there? No. Think about it. Okay. Yeah.
So Yaakov has to be disciplined. He talks about burying more than one car.
Yeah.
And if there is, and have to carry it around, and everything else, all these plans, very much documented. Why didn't he tell his sons, make sure you take the paperwork with you? Because Esau is still out there, he might give us a hard time.
Why didn't he say, make sure to do that? I don't know.
Because I think that the they have to pay
for
make a difference thing someone way or
another. Yeah.
The only way they can resolve it is by the way.
Yeah, it's a Gemara in Sota Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. You and Honey have some homework for Friday night. Okay, check it out. Yud Gimel Amud Aleph 13a. Okay, check it out.
Does anybody know where the Shemots
are? We know where some of them are. Come over and I'll give you a great coffee table book. I don't have a coffee table anymore, but I have this book. Coffee tables are not so in it. I don't know. So it's a great book. It's about all the well-known Kivrei Tzadikim, mainly in Israel. Mordechai and Esther are in the book also. There's a picture of them. There's words of Chazal, how they know about it. It's got to get redone because this is a little bit dated, but it's fascinating. I've been to a few. I think we know where maybe Binyamin is buried. We know where Yosef is buried. That's explicit in the Tanakh. That's at the end of Yeshua. We know where he's buried. And I think we know where a few more are buried. Yeah, there are pictures. There are pictures. And some of them are just rest stops in Eretz Yisrael. It's like oh, go get gas and daven at who's, it's amazing. It's amazing. So, okay, yeah. So you come over. I'm happy to tell them. So Reb Chaim Vazhinger makes a very simple ha'ara here. He says, Naftali ayah ashulcha, he was swift, he wasn't fast. That so often in life, people are running, and to what? For what? To what purpose? So the bracha was that he was going to be quick on his feet, but not, like, as opposed to Reuven, not impetuous, not in the, you know, not just jumping and running. And it was done with a lot of kavana and thought, and he's very intentional in his swiftness. Similar, the Gemara says that Kohanim's reasoning. Kohanim were very quick. They were zealous. It didn't mean they spilled any of the dam in the, by the korbanos. If they're so fast, like, didn't they make mistakes? No. There's a difference between being swift and intentional and being just fast for the sake of being fast. And the Shir HaShirim Rabbah focuses on the last words of the bracha. Hanosein Imre Shefer. He gives words of Shefer. So some of the Mefarshim say, what does that refer to? Imre Shefer, words of song, a reference to Shiras Devora. Right? Shiras Devora, they were from, Devora and Barak were from Naftan. Now, the Shir Shirim says the following. Hanosein Imre Shefer, that he's going to give words of Torah. Share words of Torah. Now, Shir HaNaftali Aaron, Torah Enrichment Program. Write this down. Okay, in a few months from now, Lag BaOmer. We'll talk about this. So, but the problem is that Naftali is not Torah. Yisachar is Torah. So that's where the Shir HaShirim Rabbah jumps in. He says the following. Halomei Torah B'Tzar. No tell Aleph. If you learn Torah through hardship, you receive a reward of 1,000 times playing, whatever. Shalom Bitzar, it's 200. Mimiata Lamed. Who do you learn this from? We learn this from two Shvatim, two paradigms, Yisachar and Naftali. Naftali learned Torah. Bitzar. And that's why the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim says, Naftali Sarim Elef. That they receive a reward of 1,000-fold. Shiftel Shel Yisachar learn Torah Shelo Bitzar. Right? Yisachar is the paradigm of the Kola guy that gets supported by Zebulun. And we need those. We need people learning Torah to sustain Klal Yisrael. And they get a 200-fold bracha. Now, what does this mean? What does this mean? Naftali is the paradigm, according to the Medrash, for those that are learning Torah uncomfortably. It's not easy. It doesn't come naturally to them. And they're working a whole day. You're working a whole day. We spend your life working and toiling, busy and running, but it doesn't excuse you from learning Torah every day. Right? That is learning Torah. Bitzar. Yisachar is given a schedule. They give it a stipend to sit and learn and focus. It's other Jews, right? Most of us, that we are busy most of our days. Hanosein Imre Shefer. Naftali is a paradigm of the Jew that says, I don't have excuses. Right? I should not make excuses in my life. I need to find time to learn. Okay? Rabbi Reisman tells a story of somebody. Rabbi Reisman is very big, and they have a big mishmar in his shul in Brooklyn. He pushes this all the time. And there was one guy that would come to his mishmar. Within 2 minutes, he'd be snoring. So within a few weeks of coming, he said, I don't think I'm going to come anymore. He said, it's better for you to sleep here than go at home and do whatever you're going to do at home. You're accustoming yourself to just showing up. And that within itself is so important. your kids, right, learn. Abba's got to go out and learn, right? And don't worry, in due time, I'll figure it out. 10, 50, whatever when time for retirement was, he goes, I'm a lomei Torah. I'm not a guy that sits on the couch at night. And that changed his view of who he was, right? And that caused him in his retirement to spend a lot of his time learning Torah, right? That is Naftali. The paradigm of Naftali is the person that works, toils all day in the business world, and his lomei Torah, Pitzar, finds time, carves that time for Talmud Torah. Okay, so two beautiful thoughts about Naftali, Ayah Shulcha, swift, intentional, something that we all need today as the society gets quicker and faster. And number two, Naftali is the man that we all can relate to. Last idea here comes from the end of the parsha. It just says the Torah, the following. So they come back from burying Yaakov. And the whole story ensues, and Jules, good question. Why is his head buried there? You got to figure that out. Now, the Torah says the following. Vayiru achei Yosef kimeis avihim. The brothers see that their father died. Vayomru lu yusimeni Yosef ashev yashiv lanu eskol ara shekmam. And they're like really concerned. What's going to happen now? Vayiru achei Yosef. They see that their father died. First of all, you don't see that their father died. They heard their father died, and they buried their father already. So there's nothing that makes sense about this pasuk, but they see. They just buried him. And we all know that they buried him. So what's the Torah telling us? They see it and they make up the story. By the way, Yosef, your father told us, our father told us that we need to, we need to go ahead and you need to forgive us. So what we see here, right, is a lack of trust. It's a lack of trust, which is a lot of the problems already began with a lack of trust. So two points here on this. Number one, what does Yosef do? Yosef makes the brothers swear that who's going to bury him? The brothers in Israel. Why is that significant? It makes no sense. It makes no sense. Yosef is a member of the government. So who should he ask to make sure that he's buried in Israel? His kids. They're probably one of them, Ephraim and Manasseh, is going to take over for him. They're going to have the power. They're going to have the connections to bury him in Israel. Why would he ask his brothers? He wanted to show them, burial in Israel for me is so important. It's paramount. I lived outside of Israel my whole life, but I was a Ben Eretz Israel. It's the only thing that I want right now. I'm putting that into your hands. I'm putting that into your hands because I trust you. Right? It's one thing to say, I trust you. It's another thing to show the brothers, I tremendously trust you with this very important thing. Rabbi Soloveitchik, this is Rabbi Soloveitchik's idea in his Chumash. He adds, who ends up burying Yosef of all the brothers? Who was the one that took responsibility for burying the Atzmos Yosef? When the Jewish people are leaving Egypt, who was it? Moshe. So you could say Moshe was a leader. He took responsibility for another leader. Who did Moshe come from? What Shevet? Levi. Who was one of the people that was responsible for throwing Yosef into the pit? Says Rashi in our parsha in Vayechi, it was Shimon and Levi that pushed him in. Who takes responsibility? Moshe, a grandchild of Shevet Levi, right? To show full circle, right? Not just I say, I believe in you, I trust you, I forgive you, but I need to show it to you, and that is the greatest thing you can do. Yes.
I read something very nice also.
In Shem.
because then Yaakov David, that's where all of this started from, and Yosef deserved to go back.
Rabbi, you used the word for forgiveness, and the brothers want to forgive. Have you ever seen anywhere where the brothers actually ask Yosef?
Good, yeah, yeah, they don't. They don't ask for forgiveness, yeah, yeah.
In terms of getting up to high, say, by the way, we're very sorry.
Yeah.
You know, for what we did, and it's still, they had to
do that. So, right, so Mitchell says this is the way that Yosef is being mochal them, is by expressing this. I just want to add a point here, is that Rabbi Soloveitchik's son-in-law, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, Zetzel, also Rabbi Soloveitchik Zetzel, he makes a great point, a great diak in the Gemara. The Gemara says, we just say this every day, I'm Rabbi Yehuda Bar Shila, I'm Rabbi Asi, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Shisha Dvarim, Adam Ocha Ber Sambala Mazah, Karen Kamis Lo Lama Ba. There's six things that we eat in this world, but the principle is for the next world. Achnasas Orchim, good. Bringing people to our home. Biker Cholim, visiting the sick. Ian Tfila, analyzing, spending time in the Talmud. Ashkama Space Manager, going short early. Magado Ban of the Talmud Torah. This is not exactly what we have. Magado Ban of the Talmud Torah. Raising your children for Torah. Sending your kids to Yeshiva. But Dan is Chaveiro Lekavskos. And judging your friend favorably. Then the Gemara says elsewhere, this is the Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Chav Zayin. The Gemara then says, really, is that true? We have another Braisa that only has three. Okay? Kibud Av Va'Em, Gemilas Chesed, V'Avad Shalom Bin Adon L'Chadero. And Avad Shalom, and so the Gemara wants to say Gemilas Chesed is probably a lot of these over here. And then the Gemara says, Havad Shalom Beit Ano Chaveiro. So, making sure there's peace between two people. So that one doesn't fit into any of these categories here. So the Gemara says, Hani Nami, the Hani Shaychi. Gemara says, these are included in these. Rashi says, what does that mean? These are included in these. These are six, these are three. Danas Chaveiro Lekavschos, judging your friend favorably, is part of making peace between two people. When you could show that you trust somebody, that you're judging them favorably, right? You didn't make a mistake, you didn't sin, you didn't. Then there is shalom. Then there is shalom. And that's what Yosef was doing at the end of his life, right? He was ensuring the shalom. He was trying his best to do whatever he could in his, through, trust him, to create shalom between all of the brothers. Not just for now, but this promise he knew was going to last them through the Gullus. He wasn't going to get buried outside of Israel, outside back to Israel for hundreds of years. He did this on purpose. This kept everybody together. Sometimes the grandparent, that generation passes away and the family separates. But if you have this promise that is kept there, this keeps the family together and binds them together for a very, very long time. Just to review today, we discussed first a contradiction in two Rashi's. What does it mean? When did the Sheba begin? Was it the death of Yaakov? The death of Shvatim is a overt Sheba, and there's a very subtle Sheba of assimilation, culturation, and that is something that we are feeling tremendously today. We discussed what's the relationship between Ephraim and Manasseh being like Reuben and Shimon, and the deaths of Rachel and Leah. What's the connection between that, everything coming full circle. We don't always get what we want in our life. Three and four, we discussed two ideas about Naftali. Lomei Torah B'Tzar, taking time for Talmud Torah, and being swift, intentional, and quick. Last idea was about Yosef. Yosef showed how he was mochel, the brothers, by doing something and entrusting them with something that was so, so important to Yosef. Wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos.